changes to the guest list for the Moonball. More signs that the sickness is worsening. Outbursts of rebellion in more of the provinces. Anything that could affect the plan. And though our everyday routine as paper girls continues as normal, I float through it with a kind of absent focus. Tired from our midnight excursions, but also too fixed on the approaching New Year to concentrate on much else. It's taken the form of a color in my mind, the brightest, sharpest white, like light catching the edge of a blade. In a few weeks' time, I'll be at the Moonball, distracting the king's guards as best I can, while Ren steals him away to bury a knife in his heart. One morning, Lil says, "Not long now, mistress." She's in the middle of fixing my hair into its usual bun. I start, causing her fingers to tangle. What do you mean? "Your birth blessing pendant," she clarifies with a frown. "Isn't it your birthday on the New Year?" I follow her gaze to the shrine in the corner of my room, because we're not allowed to wear jewelry during our lessons. Ever since coming to the palace, I've kept my birth blessing pendant there, hanging from an unlit stack of joss sticks. It seems like another thing from the life of the girl I used to be, something else to bury with her. "Is there something you're hoping for?" Lil asks. "Anything involving cake," I reply, and she laughs. But the truth is, I know exactly what sort of fate I hope to find within my pendant, and it's one that life within the palace walls could never offer me. Freedom. When there's less than 2 weeks to go, Ren and I sneak out to the clearing in the woods. I'm expecting for us to meet Kenzo as usual, but he isn't here. "He's not coming tonight," she tells me. "This is something for just you and me to work on." It's a still winter's night. The forest is wrapped in silence, the trees towering around us, shifting drops of moonlight filtering in through the canopy overhead. The air is cool with the promise of snow. The screech of some night bird cuts suddenly through the quiet, and I start, grabbing my fur shawl tighter around me. "That," Ren says with a smile, "is what we're going to try to deal with." "What do you mean?" "You need to be prepared in case there's any trouble on the night. Kenzo's going to get a weapon to you. Something small, easy to conceal. But in case you lose it, or for whatever reason he can't get it to you, you're going to have to know how to defend yourself without it. Have you ever had any martial arts training?" I arch a brow. "What do you think?" "Well, we only have a couple of weeks. We're just going to have to dive in." Ren shifts into position, knees bent, arms raised, palms open. I'm just about to copy her because it seems that's what I'm supposed to do, when she lunges forward and strikes her right hand at my head. I clamp my eyes shut, expecting a flare of pain. When it doesn't come, I inch my eyes open to find her hand hovering by my head. She draws back.
How did you do that?"
I gulp, the corner of her lips tuck up, but her face is serious. "I'm one of the Shah, remember? I won't hurt you, Lei, I promise. But you have to act like this were a real battle." "Sure," I mutter. "Let me just recollect the last time I was at war." "It's a bit like what Master Takoa teaches us," Ren continues, ignoring my quip. "You want to access your most natural instincts and allow them to control you without you having to think about it too much." If someone is coming at my head with their fist, my natural instinct is to run as fast as I can in the opposite direction. After a moment, she asks, quiet, is it?
The stillness of the forest seems to draw in. Red moves closer, boots crunching on the frosted grass. Our breaths form clouds in the air.
Think about all the times you fought against what's been happening to you. I told you that night when the king had you locked up. You're brave, Lei. Braver than you think. You fought him then, and you fought him since. And I know you are strong enough for whatever is coming next.
I drop my eyes, bunching my hands at my sides. It wasn't enough. Not that night.
Even though Ren has made it clear she's willing to listen, I still haven't spoken to her about what happened in the king's chambers. I'd been close a few times, lying in her arms in one of our rooms, wrapped safely in the velvet darkness. But my thoughts never seemed to form into a language I could share. The only time we touched on it was the first time I was to see the king after that night, at a dinner a week later. She'd asked me how I felt, if maybe I wanted to feign sickness to try to get out of it, that she'd help me do the same if he called for me again. But somehow, I know he won't. At least, not for a while.
The king likes to prove his power, yes. But he's shown me his insecurities enough times for me to know that he also wants to be adored and admired. And he knows that those are two things he can never force from me.
Ren twines her fingers through mine, my numb skin tingling at their warmth. You're stronger now, she says. You're prepared, and you're not in this alone.
She squeezes my hand.
Do you remember the day of the unveiling ceremony? Our maids got us ready together, and afterward you asked me how I looked. I interrupt dully. I remember.
She loosens a long exhale, wrapping us in a cloud of hazy white.
I'm sorry for what I said. I was so adamant when I first got here to not let any of you in. To not let any of you want to.
She pulls me closer. But when I saw you later in your dress, I couldn't help it. I had to tell you what I thought. Because I understood then.
My brow furrows.
Understood what?
Ren smiles. You. The dresses were made to represent us, based on the results of our assessments, she explains. Mine was everything I've been trained to be. Strong, without compromise, unforgiving. I knew what yours meant the minute I saw you. Your dress showed me that you had strength, but softness too. A sense of loyalty, but not without fairness. Fight and mercy. Things I wasn't allowed to feel. Things I didn't know how badly I needed.
She brings her fingertips to my cheeks, lacing them through the tangles of my hair.
I knew from that moment that I would fall in love with you. And for a long time I did everything I could to resist it. But you made it impossible.
With a sigh, I tuck my chin, nestling into her. Her heart thuds strong and steady against my cheek.
Lei, she says softly into my hair. We can do this another night if you're not up to it.
No, I say and draw back. Now. Gathering a long inhale, I picture all the memories associated with that night with the king, turning into little knives in my veins. Fire in, fear out. My hands bunch into fists.
All right, come at me. The words are barely out of my mouth when she leaps back. With a spin, she slices the side of her hand toward my middle. This time, I'm a little better prepared. I manage to jolt out of the way, though she comes for me again a beat later and has to hold back,
her open palm seconds away from cuffing my shoulder.
Give me a chance, I say, panting.
But Ren moves again, this time lashing out for me with her leg. She arcs it in a low sweep along the floor, catching my feet, and I fall back, letting out a puff of air as I land heavily on the mossy ground. She rolls on top of me.
I thought you weren't going to hurt me, I groan.
She flashes a smile. I only did that so I could do this. Her mouth lowers to mine. A familiar heat fizzes along my veins as we kiss, tongue to tongue, lips to lips, our arms laced around each other. I slowly forget about the frozen ground beneath me, the eerie sounds of the forest replaced by the rustle of our clothes and bodies as we cling to each other, our kiss deepening. Though flashes of that night still come to me every time Ren and I have touched since, and she's been careful to only take it further when I've made it clear that's what I want, there's something slightly different about our intimacy now. Still, each time it gets a little easier to stay in the moment. And right now, I allow myself to let go, to lose myself in lips and sensation and heat and love. We're both panting when we finally draw apart.
Does every Shifu do this with their students?
I say, breathless. If so, then sign me up. Ren gets to her feet, holding out a hand to help me up. I can give you as many lessons as you like when we're out of here. But for now, we need to concentrate. I did that to get you fired up. To remind you how naturally you can move your body. You need to hone in on that same passion when fighting. Then, she's lashing at me again, spinning round with a high arc of her leg. I flail back a split second before impact.
Aya, at least go easy on me.
She doesn't smile. I am. 40 minutes later, though it feels like hundreds, I'm doubled over, gasping for air, a stitch winding up one side. I've just managed to counter one of Ren's attacks properly for the first time, ducking out of the way of her right leg as it kicked high toward my head and knocking into her with my shoulder. It barely shifts her, and she lands easily. But still, it's a hit.
That was great, she says. Really good.
Thanks, I mutter between gulps of air. Ren closes the gap between us. She tugs my face up, smiling. I mean it, Lei. You're so much stronger than I could ever be. I roll my eyes. What are you talking about? You're the warrior. Only because it's all I've known. I've grown up learning this, how to fight and be brave. You've had to find it within yourself, all on your own. That's real courage. She looks away, her voice growing quiet. You know, it's not too late to back out. I'd understand. I slide my arms around her waist. Well, I wouldn't. I'm in this now, Ren. I'm all in. Her eyes flick back to me, widening, warming, with a double meaning behind my words. I love you. The phrase hovers on my lips then. Three words, three simple trips of the tongue. But ever since that night when we first admitted how we felt, I still haven't spoken them to her. However brave Ren believes me to be, I'm not yet brave enough for that. So instead I press my mouth against hers, hoping she can sense the words in my kiss and know that I mean them, that I love her and need her, and that I'm terrified for these weeks to end because our lives are about to change forever. And some part of me can't shake the premonition that it's not going to be in the way we're hoping. 32. Preparations for the new year begin the day before the moon ball. As soon as we wake, we're herded into carriages and taken to a bathhouse in royal court. It's an impressive 4 stories, a large central room divided into various areas, the upper tiers circled with balconies decorated with colored silks. I pick up familiar scents in the clouds of steam. Calendula, mulberry, passion flower. Homesickness tugs so firmly on my soul that it actually hurts. I could close my eyes and I'd be back there, working in the shop with Baba and Tien, bow barking and the mixing pots bubbling away. By some unwritten rule, Ren and I haven't discussed what will happen after we escape. It would be too much like tempting fate. And from the way the gods have played with me so far, that's not a bet I'm willing to make. But alongside being with Ren, the only thing I really want is to go back to Cienzo and reunite with my family. Maybe we could even make a life there with them. Our little unit has been shattered so many times, but we've proven we have the strength to heal, to make something new and beautiful from the sum of our broken parts. We're led to an enormous tub in the middle of the bathhouse. Water pours in from a waterfall-like feature, filling the air with its rich bubbling. 3 black-robed royal shamans bless the water. Then one by one, we step inside as they chant a Tao, settling a soft, golden magic on our skin. The ceremony is to symbolize purification, helping us shed this year's sins before we enter the new one. I stifle a grim laugh when it's my turn. If only they knew what Ren and I are planning. The only thing this bath is helping me shed is the ache in my muscles from our midnight training sessions. Back at Paper House, we spend the next few hours having meetings with the court's most trusted fortune tellers, chi doctors, and diviners. The new year marks the halfway point in our year as paper girls. The results of these assessments will shape our training next year as we prepare to move from being the king's concubines to our next roles in the palace. Or in Ren's case and mine, they would have, were we staying in the palace. I cross Ren in the corridor as our maids lead us between rooms for the final assessment of the day. She gives me a knowing smile that lights my heart up in an instant, and as we pass, she turns her hand so it brushes against mine, almost like a kiss. By the time our assessments are over, night has fallen. The grounds are cloaked in darkness, the stars hidden. As Lil changes me for dinner, I gaze out the window, an uneasy feeling rippling through me. Tomorrow. That's it. Just one more day. Are you all right, mistress? Lil asks, fixing an ornament in my hair with deft fingers. I shrug. Just nerves for tomorrow's ball, I guess. Well, don't be. I heard the king has arranged a surprise for you. Despite her grin, her words make me cold. It's the worst possible time for surprises. Whatever the king's organized, I'm sure I won't like it. The only thing we have in common is that we both defend what's ours. And tomorrow night, I'm going to prove it to him. When I arrive at Madame Himura's suite 20 minutes later, one of her maids leads me out into the courtyard. A canopy of twinkling lights stretches overhead. At the center of the garden, the pavilion has been hung with heavy velvet curtains to keep out the cold. As I step inside, my eyes sweep the group for Ren. She isn't here yet. Instead, Aoki catches my eyes. She looks a bit panicked, and she opens her lips to mouth something to me. But before she's able to, Madame Himura waves me to a seat next to Blue.
Now that we're all here,
the eagle woman says in her usual croak. I want to go over tomorrow's proceedings. In the morning. Aren't we waiting for Wren? I interrupt. The table falls quiet. Madame Himura's head swivels in my direction. We, she responds sharply with a flash of her bright yellow eyes, are not waiting for anyone. I blink. What do you mean? Renji has had to leave the palace. My stomach gives a dull kick. The ground seems to take a careening slope underneath me. A high-pitched ringing enters my brain. Her mother has been killed, Madame Himura continues. The king has ordered her to return to her family. It's uncertain when she'll be returning. I gape at her. What? Just then, Aoki jerks forward, knocking a glass of plum wine to the floor. Half of it splashes onto Chenna, who jolts back with a cry. A maid rushes over to clean the mess as Madame Himura shrieks at Aoki, and Jen, who is next to Chenna, yanks the hem of her dress away from the spreading amber puddle. Amid the chaos, I breathe raggedly. My heart hammers painfully against my ribs. I know Aoki was trying to stop me before I said something that would have given me away, or Madame Himura punished me for insolence. But though the rest of the girls are focused on the fuss at the table, next to me, Blue is still. She watches me from the corner of her ink-black eyes. There's a knowing twist to her lips. And after a few moments, she leans in close, cheek grazing mine, and hisses, just for me to hear. So that's your dirty little secret. Won't the king be shocked to learn what you've been up to all this time? I don't know how I make it through dinner. Somehow I manage it, though I almost throw up a few times, and not from the raw fish we're served, as part of more tiring New Year purification symbolism. As soon as Madame Himura permits us to leave, I get up from the table without meeting any of the girls' questioning looks and stagger back to my room. What's wrong? Lil asks as I burst through the doorway shaking. I don't answer her. I lurch to the window and collapse against it, gulping in breaths. But the air is clotted, like curdled milk, and no matter how much I gasp, I can't seem to fill my lungs. Lil tries her best to calm me. When nothing she says or does works, she even brings me a cup of sweet, milky, tartaric from the kitchens. But the sugar just spikes my nerves. When she finally manages to get me to lie down, I'm shivering all over. Please try to rest, mistress, she pleads. There's nothing to be nervous about. It's just a ball. I close my eyes, feigning tiredness, but the minute she's gone, I shove back the blankets and get to my feet, pacing the short length of my room. One more day. That's all that was left. One more day to keep our secrets. One more day, and we were out of here. We were going to be free. Now Wren is gone. And all the years of careful planning and preparation have been ruined in just a handful of hours. And Blue. Blue knows about the two of us. She could tell the king any moment now, and that would be it. All my actions with him would confirm it. He'd know, and my beautiful, ferocious-eyed assassin won't be around to take him down before he can punish us for it. A thought comes to me, so painful I actually gag. The next time I see Wren could be at our own execution. I recall the last time I saw her, the brush of our hands in the corridor, just a second of contact. How can that go down as our last moment together? How can that be our last touch? My room is too suffocating to stay in any longer. Without Ren here, I go to the room of the only other person in the palace I fully trust. Aoki rubs her eyes as I shake her awake.
Lei?
She mumbles, her voice thick with sleep.
What's happening? What's wrong?
I can't sleep, I say. Yawning, she sits up and opens her fur blanket. She drapes it around my shoulders as I nestle in beside her. She smells like sleep, like softness and safety. And I release a long exhale, leaning against her in silence. It reminds me of when I used to snuggle in with my parents when I had a nightmare. The thought that just a few hours ago, I was so hopeful that I'd make it home, lances me afresh. And I grind my teeth together to stop the tears. Aoki wraps her arms round her legs, propping her cheek on her knees to look sideways at me.
I'm so sorry about Ren's mother. Do you know if they were close?
It takes me a moment to untangle her question from Ren's original Shaw family. She's talking about the Hanos, of course.
I'm not sure,
I admit. Ren has always spoken far more about Kitai Hano than his wife.
I don't think so. Still, it must be awful.
After a beat, she goes on carefully.
The king is close with the Hanos. I'm sure he'll do everything to look after Ren and her family.
They're paper castes, Aoki. And still one of his most trusted clans.
You know, he even gave them a special guard made up of his own soldiers.
Maybe one of those guards was the killer. I snap before I can stop it.
Aoki winces. I know you're upset, but what you're saying is...
Possible? Likely?
The king and the Hanos have always supported each other, Lei. Why would they turn on each other now?
Because maybe the king suspects what the Hanos are planning. Maybe Ren's mother was murdered by the king's men to send a message to them. Or maybe, if he believes Ren to be involved, he had her mother killed as a way of getting her out of the palace. A death in the family is one of the only reasons a paper girl is allowed to take leave. But I keep my thoughts to myself. I walk out of Aoki's room half an hour later, feeling even worse than before. My mind is reeling and I'm so distracted, I don't notice the figure in my room until it's too late. A fur-covered hand clamps across my mouth. Not a word. Growls a low, husky voice. 33. Kenzo doesn't let me go until we're outside, cloaked in the darkness of the gardens. His bronze eyes fix on my own as he glares down at me, waiting as I gulp in air, recovering. Our breaths spiral in the frozen air. It takes me a moment to notice that he's wearing silk robes, his marbled wolf's coat, combed and slick. He must have come straight from the king's pre-moon ball banquet.
You scared me,
I hiss at him once I'm able to speak. I'm sorry, he says, though his expression remains hard. It was the only way I could get you alone. I was meant to meet Ren to finalize the plans for tomorrow. Then I heard the news. I waited as long as I could before coming to find you. I blink.
Find me?
The plan has to go ahead, Lei. Ren won't be able to return in time, but everything else is ready. You are going to have to kill the king in her place. There's a pause. Then I laugh.
You can't be serious.
I am deadly serious. he replies, a growl deep in his throat.
Look,
I say, lifting my hands and taking a step back.
I want to help, but...
You didn't expect to have to get your hands dirty? My mouth snapped shut.
I didn't expect to be the one to do it. Last time I checked, I wasn't a lost member of the Shah, trained since birth to be a secret warrior assassin goddess.
Wind catches my hair, making it dance. I clutch my night robe tighter around me. The air is as frosted as the ground, and the flimsy material of my nightdress isn't much protection from the cold. But Kenzo doesn't seem to notice. I suppose having fur makes you forget how vulnerable bare skin can be. He regards me impassively with his bright wolf eyes.
We can adapt the plan,
he suggests eventually. I goggle at him.
Adapt the...
All the elements are in place. You'll be taking over Ren's role, which you're already familiar with. Being able to get the king alone. For him to let his guard down, that's the important part. That's why Ren had to spend this time cultivating a relationship with him. Only a paper girl can kill him without us risking our position in the court or exposing our involvement. He pauses, something gentler in his look when he adds,
You have motive enough. It will look like a passion crime.
But Ren will be coming back, won't she? She'll come back and then we can try again. Kenzo shakes his head.
There's no time.
Even with his voice lowered, it still has bite. He moves nearer to grip me by the shoulders, and I brace at the sensation of demon hands on me. They're so large, they easily span the space from my neck to where my arms start to slope down. Memories jolt through me from that night with the king. Noticing my discomfort, Kenzo lets me go, but he stays close.
Listen to me, Lei. It has taken us years, Ren's entire lifetime, to reach this point. You know how much we've sacrificed for this. We're so close. If we don't act now, we might not get another chance.
I hug my arms across my chest, shivering.
What do you mean? The king has been growing suspicious. I fear the Hanos are losing influence over him. Since the assassination attempt, he's been hungry for retribution, to catch the court members who helped them. He knows there are those in the palace who'd betray him. I believe he's starting to look at me as one of them.
But I thought you're one of his most trusted advisors.
I am.
Kenzo's lip curls, a wolfish gesture, his eyes flickering forward.
And it's been many hard years to get there.
But recently, the king hasn't been so receptive to what I've been advising. The sickness is getting worse, and he's convinced it's because of the gods, that they're punishing him for being a weak ruler. He's been pushing ever more aggressive tactics to try to demonstrate his might.
I nod. You told me the same. It hasn't been easy.
Kenzo continues, rubbing a hand at the side of his neck, mussing his smooth down fur.
I've been trying to advise him differently, but I need to maintain my cover. It sickens me to think of all the deaths I'm aiding.
He turns his face away jerkily and lets out a cold laugh.
You know, there are official royal executioners. By ordering me, Naja, and Ndezi to do their work that day, the king was sending a clear message. Do not cross me. Look at what happens to those who do.
I squeeze myself tighter. If he's suspicious of your loyalty, why hasn't he confronted you yet? because he understands the benefit in keeping his enemies close. Do you know how the Hanos even came to be aligned with him?
I shake my head.
They were one of the strongest clans in Ikara before the Bull King's ascension 200 years ago,
Kenzo explains.
They occupied the entire Han territory. That's where they got their name. From the two ancient families in the region, the Hans and the Nos. The Bull King was originally from Janna, from a tiny trading post village in the southern deserts. He had no influence over Han. He was only able to take control because the Hanos were supporters of equality between demons and humans. They welcomed immigrant clans and were keen to develop bonds between all castes. By all accounts, the Bull King impressed them with his intelligence and ambition, and he rose quickly through their ranks. And what were the Hanos rewarded with?
Kenzo's nostrils flare as he lets out a hard puff of air.
Betrayal. The Bull King used his influence on the Hanos' rule to empower the demon castes, manipulating them, making them hungry for control, then used their power to overtake their court.
My eyes grow wide.
And the Hanos still made an alliance with him after all that? The Night War was devastating for paper castes, Lei. We've all heard the stories passed down by our ancestors. Years of cooperation and partnership with demons. Eradicated in an instant. Of course, there has always been conflict between clans. But now, there was a force uniting the demon clans, giving them reason to forge alliances and maintain peace between their groups in order to hold power over paper castes. You yourself have experienced this force firsthand. I am sure that the last thing the Hanos wanted was to pledge their allegiance to the very demon who betrayed them. But the clan needed time to recover. And Katai's forebearers understood that they needed the king's support in this new world. That they could later use his power as their own. So they went to him, groveling.
A growl rises in Kenzo's throat.
How could the king resist the sight of his enemies, made to kneel at his feet like beggars?
But he knew what he'd done to them,
I say absently, pushing aside the wind-blown hair from my face. Didn't he worry they'd end up betraying him too?
Kenzo releases a rough laugh.
An arrogant warlord like him? I bet he didn't think of it once. All he saw was a chance to use their connections among the human clans.
Look at the trouble the king is facing now.
Winning a war is the easy part. All it takes is brawn. Maintaining your rule afterward is the real test.
I stare. So the Hanos have been planning their revenge for 200 years?
How many years would you wait for revenge against those who stole your kingdom from you?
Kenzo's bronze eyes fix me to the spot.
Who tore down what you had so patiently been building? Who slaughtered hundreds of thousands of your kind and laughed while doing it?
The hatred in his voice is as powerful as thunder. It rolls through the air between us and into my bloodstream, an electric vibration that charges my whole body. He adds, quieter, but just as fiercely,
I'd wait a lifetime to gain my revenge against someone who hurt just one person I love. For an entire kingdom of them?
I think of Mama, of Ren. Kenzo watches me.
200 years. Doesn't seem long now, does it?
But what happens after? Once they've had their revenge, if that's what this is all about.
Of course it's not, By all accounts, the Hanos were genuinely open to seeing how this king's rule developed. Along with needing to recover their military strength, I'm sure that was another factor in their waiting so long. But the Demon King's regime only proved to them the importance of claiming back the throne. Now, with the sickness and greater rebel activity than ever before, the king's rule has grown even harsher, and not just for paper castes. He turns jerkily away, staring into the darkness. When Kenzo looks back, there's something sad and almost broken in his eyes, which makes me wonder if there's a story behind his words, what memories might be haunting him. "Is that why you're helping the Hanos?" I ask. "Something happened to make you turn against the king?" "Yes," he answers simply. He looks down at me through narrowed eyes. "Ren told me you're from a rural village in Cienzo. Maybe it's hard for you to understand, coming from somewhere so peaceful." I take a shaky inhale, harden my gaze. "We were attacked by the king's men 7 years ago. They took my mother." "So you know what it's like to have a loved one stolen from you," the wolf says. With surprising tenderness, he reaches for my hands. His huge, paw-like hands easily swallow mine. But unlike his touch earlier, it's comforting this time, almost brotherly. The way he is with Ren. He comes closer, the earthy scent of him unfurling from his ash-gray coat, ruffled now from the wintry wind. "Ren trusts you, Lei. She believes in you, and that means we all do. Will you do this for us? Will you kill the king?" And even though it terrifies me, even though all I want is for a laughing Ren to come out behind a bush to tell me this is all some crazy horrid joke, there's no hesitation when I answer. "Yes, I will." Kenzo blows out a forceful exhale. Lowering his head, he brings the backs of my hands to his forehead in a light press and murmurs huskily, "Thank you, Lei. 80 times thank you. On one condition." He looks up. "My father and Tien are protected from any punishment should..." I swallow. "Should it go wrong?" "Of course. We'll look after them whatever happens. You have my word." I nod. Then I take a ragged breath. "Well, I guess it's settled then." In an instant, Kenzo's furred fingers wrap around my own, as though closing the promise into my skin. "Come," he says, and tugs me in the direction of the forest. Though I stumble to keep up with his long, loping gait, he doesn't slow. "Time to show me what you've learned from Ren." The clearing is hushed, the heaviness of the cloudless night pressing down on us like one of the sky god's mighty hands. Kenzo draws me into the center, and I think he's going to say something. I've just agreed to murdering the king, after all. But just like that first time with Ren, the swing of his fist takes me entirely by surprise. I yelp, scooting back just in time. "Wait!" He cuts me off with a spinning kick, the whir of his foot as it passes overhead, making me flinch. "The king will not wait," he growls.
"Don't you think I know that? At least give me a moment to prepare..."
He interrupts me with a thrusting punch to the gut. His pointed fingers catch me right in the middle, the contact throwing me off balance. I fall over, more out of shock than anything, a sharp exhale escaping my lips as I land painfully on my tailbone.
"Ren never hit me,"
I shout up at him, rubbing my spine. Kenzo's lips pull back in a wolfish snarl. "But the king will." Still, he holds out a hand helping me to my feet. "This time tomorrow, you'll be alone with him. And unlike me and Ren, the king will not go easy on you. He will not hold back. You have to be prepared for what that will be like. The minute he realizes what you are doing, he'll retaliate. It'll take everything you have to stay alive.
I jut my chin, glowering. Why did you even ask me then, if you think I don't stand a chance?
I don't think that. It's just that your chance is slim. But this is how the earth and heavens work, how they have always worked. All that is needed for anything to happen is for someone, god or mortal, demon or man, to see that slim chance and take it.
He fiddles with the tie at his waist, pulling up the hem of his shirt to reveal a leather band slung above his hips. Fixed to the belt is a short sword. I get a glimpse of a delicately engraved jade hilt before Kenzo's fingers close around it. The metallic song of the blade as he pulls it free from the scabbard sets my teeth on edge, reminding me of that night under the theater, the moment the assassin drew his blade on Ren. The moment so many things changed. All court members carry a dagger like this one, Kenzo says. He holds it out for me to examine, including the king. I finger the edge of the blade. The thought of it piercing the king's skin, digging in through muscle and tendon, spilling blood, seems unreal, something out of a dream. Stowing the dagger, Kenzo steps back.
Take it from me,
he says, and splays his arms. My first few attempts are pitiful. I comprehend now just how easy Ren was being on me. Kenzo offers no such exemptions. He bats me roughly away every time I get close and attacks back at a relentless pace. In just a few minutes, I'm sweating despite the cold, my panting breaths fogging the air. I can feel bruises beginning to flower under my skin.
Maybe you were right,
he says after my latest attempt has me sprawled on the ground where he threw me, and not lightly. I clamber to my feet, massaging the cramp in my side. What do you mean?
Maybe it is hopeless. We should have asked one of the other girls. Any of them would do a better job than you.
I know what you're doing, I shoot back. He cocks his head.
Whatever do you mean?
Ren got me fired up too, but at least she did it with kisses. Something twitches across his lips. Would that work? I grin, half manic with exhaustion, and he returns it, his wolfish mouth widening, until both of us break into laughter, Kenzo with his head thrown back, and me doubled over, clutching my belly. The noise is jagged and wild in the wintry hush of the forest. We laugh harder than his joke warrants. Tears fill my eyes, and suddenly I'm not laughing anymore. When Kenzo sees this, he hesitates, a tender look crossing his eyes, and it's this that reminds me so strongly of Ren, of the way she looks at me right before a kiss, or right after, open and vulnerable, and full of hope. That before I even realize what I'm doing, I'm lurching forward. Kenzo reacts a second too slow. For the first time, my hands make contact. I push him back, clinging onto his rough fur as he grabs my collar to prise me off. With a grimace, I butt the heel of my right hand into his neck. At the same time, I bring my knee between his legs, and as he slackens, I tug aside his robes and wrap my fingers round the hilt of the knife. I tumble off him, laughing again now, holding the blade up to the sky. I did it, I shout. My voice breaks. I swipe a sleeve across my face, and though the tears don't stop, I keep laughing anyway. The knife lifted high in my shaking fist. I did it. Kenzo gives me a half smile, just as humorless as my laughter.
Yes, you did. His furred hand wrapping around my own, he brings the point of the blade to rest at the soft underbelly of his neck. But do not forget the last part. Right here, Lei. This is where you aim tomorrow. He squeezes my fingers, the engraved edges of the jade hilt digging into my skin. Push the blade deep, and do not stop.
34. The eve of the new year, the palace is transformed. Decorations have been going up in all the courts. I'm kept busy as a small army of maids prepare me for the ball. But Lil manages to sneak me outside for a few minutes to see what's been going on. A tidal wave of scarlet and gold appears to have stormed through the palace. Women's court is on fire. Vibrant ribbons and streamers adorning every building. Lanterns of all shapes and sizes hang from the eaves, along with strings of copper coins, glinting as they turn in the breeze. Bowls of offerings filled with kumquats and stacks of succulent peaches and clementines sit on porches, and cracked mirrors to ward off evil spirits have been set beside every doorway, a New Year's superstition that we also followed back in Cienzo. Lil tells me the king lent royal shamans to each court to infuse magic into some of the decorations. She points out a giant paper crane, symbolic of good fortune and longevity, that has been erected in a courtyard across the street. The bird is at least 15 feet tall. Its garnet beak glitters in the winter sun. As we watch, it stretches its great wings, paper feathers rustling. I lace my arm around her shoulders and smile down at her. My eyes sting. I blink quickly to keep the tears away. Thank you, Lil, I say thickly, for everything. The smile she returns me is so wide and trusting, I have to look away. Over the next few hours, I, like the palace, am also transformed. My body is polished and oiled with an amber-like liquid containing flecks of gold that catch the light with every movement. Coal rims my eyes, artfully smudged with bronze shadow. Shimmering pearl powder embellishes my cheeks. A pale paint is swept over my lips, enhancing the brightness of my irises. It's like putting on a mask, each dab of color, each stroke of a brush, and I imagine the paint as armor, my battle gear. As they work, I visualize adding other, hidden layers onto my armor. All the reasons I am doing this. What happened to Mama? What has happened to other mothers? Other women and men and children of raids, just like the one on my village. My love for Ren. My love for Aoki and even the other girls. And the hope that this can bring all of us freedom, along with every paper caste slave. The executed assassins. On my second night in the palace, the woman who screamed at me a word I've been unable to forget since. Darja. It's not my own kin who I'll be betraying tonight. And then, of course, the final reason. A night just a few weeks ago. A night I will never allow to be repeated. Once my makeup is complete, the maids arrange my hair into a plaited bun at the nape of my neck, twined through with beads and tiny yellow chrysanthemums, before dressing me in a vivid red cheongsam with long lace sleeves. So tight-fitting it pins my ribcage in place. I repress a mad laugh. Well, at least I'm dressed the part. Because what reputable assassin doesn't wear perfume and a slinky dress? By the time the maids leave, night is falling. They file out slowly. I'm about to turn away when the last girl pauses in the doorway, fiddling with the hem of her dress. I go forward to help her. It must have caught on something. But as I bend down, she pushes something into my palm. Good luck, Lei,
she whispers, pewter eyes meeting mine. She bows and hurries away. As soon as I'm alone, I open the silk-wrapped package. Lantern light catches on a thin blade, barely longer than a needle. Its lacquered bone has been made to look like a hair ornament. Carefully, I tuck it into the top of my thick braid with trembling fingers. This is it. The last piece of my battle gear. My weapon. Before I leave, I go to the little shrine in the corner of my room and take my birth blessing pendant from where it's been hanging. I loop it around my neck. It's heavier than I remember. Just like I used to, I cup it in my palm, wondering what future it holds for me. But this time, there is an additional question I've never had to ask myself before. Will I even live to find out? Aoki meets me outside Paper House. She's also dressed in red, as is tradition for New Year's celebrations. Delicate robes, as thin as moth wings. Her lips look sensual, painted a dark ruby color. And she seems so far from that nervous 16-year-old girl I met on that first night in the palace that I have to blink back a sudden rush of tears. The king won't be able to take his eyes off you, I tell her. And from her smile, I can tell that for the first time, she truly believes it. The journey to the inner courts flies by in a whirl of color and noise. Every street overflows with decorations. Music sifts through the air. Dancers performing in twirling dresses, the bells on their anklets chiming. Children scream with laughter as they chase each other down the streets. Scarily realistic origami masks of the heavenly rulers strapped across their faces. One of them dashes so close to my carriage, the oryx veer quickly aside to avoid her. The little girl laughs, long hair streaming behind the angry red face of Nisri, goddess of chaos. She waves as she watches us go, but there's something creepy about the contrast of that light, high-pitched laugh with the furrowed leer of one of the most dangerous gods, and I shrink away from the window. By the time we arrive at the moon ball, my heart is beating so hard it physically shakes me. The tree-lined avenue is busy. As my palanquin waits in a long line of others, I check again that the pin is still in place. My fingers tremble so much that I almost unravel the whole fancy hairstyle my maid spent so long creating. Outside, I join the rest of the guests as we're led toward a large, round building made entirely of glass. Its domed roof sparkles with streams of tiny lights. A ring of enchanted gardens surrounds it, fireflies shimmering over the treetops. Mistress Ciara told us earlier that the building is called the Floating Hall, and I now see why. Because of the way it perches over a lake, held up by thin crystal columns rooted in the water, it looks like it were hovering in midair. The aquamarine glow from the lake below sends shifting ripples of color across the glass. Inside, the hall is packed. For the new year, all the guests are wearing red. But instead of looking celebratory, it's like being swallowed by a sea of blood. Bodies press from every side. Music fills the domed space, rising over the buzz of voices. I try to stay close to Aoki, but the wave of the crowd separates us. I end up getting shifted toward Blue and the twins. Beautiful dress, Lei, Jin remarks, her sister nodding in agreement. Yours too, I say, distracted, barely glancing at what they're wearing. Both of you. Smiling, they turn away to greet someone else. As soon as their backs are turned, Blue wraps her hand round my wrist, pulling me close. Her fingers dig into my skin. I know what you've been up to, Nine, she whispers. You and Ren. I wrench my arm away. Please, Blue,
Please don't tell anyone.
She laughs, her eyes wild. It takes me a few moments.